From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, this is your SDPB News Podcast. I'm Jackson Dirks in Pierre. Today, the latest news from the Capitol building here in Pierre, South Dakota. We're in the third week of the 101st legislative session. Today, we'll talk about a utility fire mitigation bill that has some worried about the impact on fire victims. A look at a constitutional question the state's grappling with, a bill killed on the House floor, and more. Later on in the podcast, we'll check in on a candlelight vigil held in Pierre yesterday to honor people killed by federal agents. It's Tuesday, January 27th. Here are today's stories. One bill could set a higher bar to overcome for landowners who take electric utility companies to court for wildfire damages. It protects utility companies that establish a wildfire mitigation plan. Senate Bill 36 authorizes electric utility companies and cooperatives to establish wildfire mitigation plans, have it approved, and then published publicly. Along with it, the same entities would need to submit an annual report proving compliance. While testifiers didn't take issue with those aspects of the bill, many argued against its liability components. Under the bill, a plaintiff could recover damages from utility companies if they prove the utility failed to substantially comply with elements of the wildfire mitigation plan, or if they can prove the utility acted with malice or criminal intent that resulted in the actual damage caused. Plaintiffs could only recover punitive damages if malice or criminal intent is proven. Along with that, recoverable damages to personal property would be the minimal cost to restore the property to its condition prior to the wildfire, or the difference of the pre- and post-fire fair market value of the property. It would also bar recovering non-economic losses unless the plaintiff dies or has, quote, visible bodily injury in the form of a burn from a wildfire. Representative Steve Kolbeck is the bill's prime sponsor and the Director of Business Affairs for XL Energy. He responds to a question on if the bill would make the affected individuals whole.
Say three cows died, it's going to be a lot more than that because we're talking about a wildfire. But we're going to pay for those cows, we're going to pay for that grass, those hay bales, that vehicle. That's it. When you go beyond that, when you talk about, I have migraines because I witnessed the fire, when you go beyond that and then the money becomes more and more and more, that's what we're talking about. In my humble opinion, we want to make people whole. We just don't want to make them rich.
However, opponents say it undercuts the victims. That includes lobbyist Steve Siegel, who represents the Trial Lawyers Association.
Many times in these fire cases, the victims lose absolutely everything. Their homes, their cars, photographs, clothes, family heirlooms, pets. And under this bill, they simply would not be made whole. Is that fair when the electrical utility started the fire and the homeowner did not contribute to the cause and origin of the fire in any way? I don't think it is fair.
The bill advances out of committee 6-3 and is headed for the Senate floor. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks in Pierre. Governor Larry Roden is asking the state Supreme Court for an opinion regarding the lieutenant governor's authority breaking a tie vote in the Senate. SDPB's Josh Chilson reports.
The lieutenant governor serves as president of the state Senate, but does not vote unless there's a tie. This can happen if a member is absent. That's in the state constitution. But the constitution also says a bill can only pass with a majority of members elect. In the Senate, that means at least 18 of 35 members. These two rules recently came to a head. A bill came out to a 17-17 tie, with one senator absent. Lieutenant Governor Tony Venhuizen cast a vote in favor, breaking the tie. But Senate Pro Tem Chris Carr challenged the move. He argued the original 17 votes the bill received does not constitute a majority of members elect. Acting as Senate President, Venhuizen ruled against Carr. In explaining his decision to the Senate, he said there's no case law on this discrepancy. But he noted how the body is modeled after the U.S. Senate, which allows tie-breaking votes, and cited a concept arguing every word in the Constitution should have meaning.
If the language saying that the lieutenant governor votes in the case of a tie does not apply because of the requirement of members-elect, it would raise the question, why is it there at all? Why did they put it there? What was it meant to do?
In response, Carr appealed the ruling. He argued the tie-breaking vote only applies to procedural votes that only require a majority of members present.
But when it comes to final passage of a bill from this chamber of senators that were elected, it requires a majority of members elect. And I think the Constitution's clear on that.
The Senate backed Carr's objection in a 24-10 vote. After all that, the Senate ended up later reconsidering the bill, which updates the permit application process for utilities building energy facilities. It received an amendment, and the Senate overwhelmingly approved it. However, the question of the Senate President's constitutional power remains. That's what the governor wants the state's highest court to clarify. I'm SDPB News, Josh Shilson.
With no reconsideration vote in the House, a judicial system-supported bill is dead. It would have created a pretrial supervision program in Pennington County. SDPB's CJ Keen has more.
While initially on the table for reconsideration, Speaker of the House, Representative John Hansen, dropped the gavel after no votes were tallied. This comes after Monday's floor debate put the bill on the fast track to rejection. Proponent Representative Mike Stevens, a Yankton Republican, says the program serves as a cost save for the Sioux Falls area by allowing the courts to do more meaningful work than serving warrants.
Because if you don't show up for court, then they send out a warrant to go arrest you, to bring you back, put you back in jail. And so what happens is in Minnehaha County, that's reduced it by 40%. And so what this is to do is hopefully stop that, to at least slow it down. Because you know what? If our officers are out there just picking up people to bring them because they didn't show up, that's costing the county money and the taxpayers money.
On the other hand, Rapid City Republican Representative Mary Fitzgerald, an opponent, says the bill oversteps reasonable policy.
This bill is simply not a pilot program. It is a fundamental shift in how South Dakota handles criminal accountability before trial. It is a shift we are not prepared to make.
Despite Fitzgerald's claim, the grant funding would not fund the program in perpetuity, and a similar program already exists in the state. Further, there is a constitutional question of surveillance of an individual who is not convicted of a crime. Some, like Aberdeen Republican Representative Brandi Schaefbauer, took issue with the origin of the grant money, the MacArthur Foundation, and its priorities like racial equity and bias training.
By the strings attached to this foundation, especially this foundation, I do not think we will actually achieve our goals to reducing the recidivism. What we will achieve are bringing Marxist, communist propaganda to our state.
The mission of the MacArthur Foundation, according to its website, is to, quote, build a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. I'm SDPB's CJ Keen.
The state is one step closer to launching the Rural Health Transformation Program. The House of Representatives has granted the state the authority to spend hundreds of millions of federal dollars for the first 2 years of the five-year program. During the debate, Representative Drew Peterson of Salem shared a personal story. He says access to prenatal care saved his wife and son when complications were discovered during pregnancy. He says approving this program can help many more rural families.
If we want to talk about deficits and things like that, let's go for it. This is not that bill. Whether we spend this money in South Dakota or in California or Texas, this money is getting spent. We can serve our communities with these dollars. We can help keep these facilities open in our communities so that we can continue to allow people to live in rural communities with a high quality of life.
Though several lawmakers continue to express concerns over the federal deficit and legislative authority over the state budget, others maintain the program could yield once-in-a-lifetime improvements for rural areas. The House voted 56-11 in favor of moving the bill forward. It heads next to the Senate. A joint resolution asking voters if they want to ban eminent domain solely for economic development or increased tax revenue purposes passes out of the House. Lawmakers debated if the word solely opens the door up for eminent domain use if it's for partial economic development use. However, legislators say the word guarantees eminent domain can be used for rural water and electric projects if needed. Ultimately, it was included in the approved bill. The resolution heads to the Senate, and if passed, would head to voters during the November election.
Legislative coverage on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Bar Foundation, SDN Communications, Missouri River Energy Services, and your membership in the Friends of SDPB. Thank you.
More than 50 people gathered in front of the federal building in Pierre Monday night. They held a candlelight vigil for people killed by federal agents. SDPB's Lori Walsh reports.
The sun has gone down in Pierre. The temperature hovers around 20 degrees. The wind chill makes it feel about 10. This is the second candlelight vigil on this corner honoring people killed by federal agents in less than a month. People have brought candles in glass jars and candles set into aluminum cans. If the wind blows a flame out, it is relit, sometimes by the candle in a neighbor's hand. Reverend Canon Dr. Lauren Stanley, an Episcopal priest, passes out song sheets. Stanley reads names of people who have died during federal immigration raids in 2025 and 2026.
Heber Sanchez Dominguez, Renee Nicole Good, Alex Prete.
Stanley relays a message from faith leaders in Minneapolis.
The only way hatred can be effectively resisted is doubling down on love.
And from the bishop in Pierre.
We are Jesus' church of today. The work, therefore, is our work to do.
That's followed by a poem by Amanda Gorman.
Fear not those without papers, but those without conscience.
When people take turns to speak, they express gratitude and frustration, worry and hope.
I have kids. I don't want them to grow up like this.
After more than an hour of praying and preaching nonviolence on a street corner in Pierre, Stanley reminds those gathered to take care of one another and to take care of themselves. They close with an American folk song. Some people hug, others dash across the street to the Walgreens to get warm. Most head to their cars until the next vigil. I'm SCPB's Lori Walsh in Pierre.
South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley says he's filing to have a case involving abortion pill advertisements moved to South Dakota. It stems from an ad campaign backed by Mayday Health. The New York-based nonprofit put signs in gas stations across the state offering information about abortion pills. Jackley filed a cease and desist letter arguing abortion pills are illegal in the state. Mayday sued, saying the signs are protected by free speech. The case is set to be heard in a U.S. district court in New York. Jackley filed a brief arguing the case should be heard in South Dakota State Court. He says he'll personally appear in court Thursday to argue the case. The legislative session is in full swing and policy proposals and faction lines are being drawn. With 2026 elections on the horizon, much is on the line for South Dakota lawmakers and gubernatorial hopefuls. One major policy battle, property taxes. SDPB's Dakota political junkies Jonathan Ellis and Patrick Lally analyzed the debate so far with Lori Walsh.
The governor's, you know, option being one of them, where it would just be a one-to-one with the counties that they would use to decrease property taxes, which, you know, you're not going to find a lot of local government people that have a problem with that necessarily, but it does shift the burden. And there are other proposals out there that you know better than I that would do even more sales tax to offset property taxes. Mm-hmm. That's shifting a tax burden. I don't know how else you can see that to people who are less able to. It shifts it to renters. It shifts it to just average people and away from homeowners.
Governor's arguing it shifts it to visitors.
Yeah.
And therefore, that's
maybe
the places where the property taxes are the highest are the places that get the largest number of visitors. And therefore, the sales tax will come from them and that will boost. I mean, it comes from us, too.
Yeah.
But that was the argument that, as I understood it in the State of the State address, was, we're going to leverage these visitors and visitor numbers.
A lot of those visitors come from South Dakota, you know. So if you're from Brookings, right, you're a visitor.
Yeah, but millions come from outside South Dakota.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. I understand. To the Black Hills. I mean, we get a lot of tourism here, obviously, but it's regional tourism. And if you really want to take – I don't understand why they don't just crank up the hotel taxes. If that's who you want to hit, because I don't know.
Because nobody wants to raise taxes.
Well,
Jonathan,
whenever you travel, you pay way more wherever you go than you do if you get a hotel room here. But that's just...
Jonathan, who has the advantage here? It seems like the governor's proposal would have the advantage. He gets the state of the state where he was able to say, this is what I did last year. Does he have the advantage to getting his proposal through, or does somebody from the outside have an advantage because they don't have to deal with any... compromises for lack of a better word.
I would say by virtue of the fact that this is the governor's office and that South Dakota has, compared to other states, a very strong executive branch, I think that when the governor wants something, the governor automatically starts off at an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the appeal to some lawmakers will be, it'll be something that's voted on at the local level. It's a locality issue. So I do see that there'll be some appeal with some lawmakers on that. You know, but I just, by virtue of it being the governor's proposal, that automatically starts off with an advantage, for sure.
Hey, Jonathan, I have a question for you. And it comes from when you had Odenbach on your podcast. And I, the thing that struck me about that was he said that he sees property taxes as a moral issue. And there is this trend that, why am I paying government rent for land that I own? And you hear that all over the country. How much of that is at play here in this conversation? That's really, that's a major subtext that doesn't get talked about very much.
It's definitely part of, I think, some within some wings of the Republican Party that they see it that way. But I think it's, I think that most lawmakers see, property taxes as sort of a legitimate place and a longstanding place in order to fund some of the essential services we talked about, especially schools. But yeah, that's definitely part of what some lawmakers, do think that is a moral issue. But
I'm not paying property taxes as rent on my house. I'm paying for the government services to live in that neighborhood. The ambulance is going to come if I need it. The fire truck is going to come if I need it. The school district that I can send my child to, or the neighbors send their children to, right?
That's the argument against
that. Okay, so they're saying that okay.
But you can make that same argument about income taxes. Mm-hmm. Like, why do you get to profit off my labor, right? Or why do you have to take so you can make that same argument, I think, about any tax, right? I mean,
we do. We don't sure. have an income tax, and we do argue and make that argument about every single tax. That I just remember a conversation with Dennis Dugard when he was governor about all the exemptions. Mm-hmm. And, anytime you wanted to take away an exemption, people would say you're raising taxes. And it was a moral catastrophe because you had no right to raise taxes by removing an exemption.
Yeah.
And that was always a difficult political balance beam to walk on in Pierre.
You can find the full conversation online at sdpb.org/podcast. And you can follow every Dakota Political Junkies conversation by subscribing to the podcast. And that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, X, and YouTube at SDPB News, and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. As always, thanks for listening.